The British Army was hardly marching down Wall Street, but 10 ships had docked downriver on Staten Island. Ruth and me followed behind Madam and Lady Seymour as we strolled with the crowd to the battery as fast as our skirts would allow. Madam quivered with excitement, but was wise enough not to say a word, for we found ourselves in a crowd of rebels furious about the arrival of King George's boys. Someone fired a cannon a stone's throw from where we stood. Gunpowder smoke drifted across the crowd as soldiers started running every which way, carrying on about orders this and orders that. Someone fired a musket and a woman shrieked. Two more muskets blasted. Rough voices commanded the firing to cease. Mothers chased after their children. Five men in frontier leggings and leather shirts sprinted past us, rifles at the ready. Should I grab Ruth and run for the barracks? Could we slip away to sanctuary in the commotion? I'd look for Colonel Reagan, but saw him not. None of the men were familiar to me. Had I waited too long? The cannons fired once more, then fell silent. The ships were too far away to be hit, and the cannonballs fell into the river. Another musket cracked fire, but this was more distant. The crowd had settled some, and soldiers were lining up in orderly fashion, thanks to their barking officers. "Everyone please disperse," shouted a broad-shouldered man in a crisp blue coat and a sleek, freshly powdered wig. "There is no danger here. Go about your business." "Come now," Madam said. "We will leave this rabble." She walked away with Lady Seymour. I went to follow them, but Ruth would not move. She stood rooted to the ground, trembling against my leg as if a gale were blowing. "Ruthie," I patted her back. "It's over now. The noise is gone. No more bangs." I reached to pry her fingers from me. They were stiff and shaking. She was in the grip of a fit, a small one. "Oh, Lord, I beseech thee." Madam had stopped and was watching us. "Come along, girl," she snapped. "Turn your sister loose and run ahead to prepare the meal." Ruth quivered, her teeth chattering in her head. "She's a wee bit frightened, ma'am," I explained. "Never heard a cannon go off before."
"Neither have I," added Lady Seymour. "She'll feel better once she starts to walk."
"Please, Lord, hear what Missus said, Ruth. Walking is the best thing. Please keep her on her feet. Please make it stop. We've work to do, baby girl." My voice was as false as my smile. "Please." I stepped forward, pushing Ruth ahead as I went. The trembling stopped, but her body went limp. I picked her up and settled her on my hip, her head on my shoulder as if she had fallen asleep. Lady Seymour frowned in concern.
"Is she poorly?"
Madam cast a suspicious eye at us. "No, ma'am," I lied. "Just tired."
"She is not suffering her particular ailment, is she?" Madam asked, her voice cutting like a blade.
"No, ma'am," I lied again.
"She helped carry out the ashes this morning, and it tired her." Madam glared a moment longer. Lady Seymour stepped in front of Madam.
"The heat affects small children more than most. Make sure your sister drinks some water before any more chores."
"Yes, ma'am. Thank you, ma'am." I bobbed a clumsy curtsy and walked as fast as I could with the limp burden in my arms, beseeching with every step. British ships continued to sail up the river all the day and all the night. Madam set us to polishing the silver in the hope that we'd soon be serving dinner to the British High Command. On Monday morning, Becky sent me to the washerwoman with a giant basket of dirty tablecloths and serviettes. So many ships had arrived by then, hundreds, folks said, with thousands of soldiers, that we could see the patches of white sail far down the harbor. The washerwoman's home stood empty. A neighbor said that she had fled at first light, terrified at the thought of invasion. She wasn't the only one. I carried the basket of linen back to the house on Wall Street, put a pot of water over the fire, and gathered the soap and the scrubbing board. Becky was off in search of a seamstress, so Ruth helped me haul the water to the wash tub in the backyard. I gave her a small bucket and sliver of soap, and she got to work washing a pair of stockings and singing to herself. She showed no ill effects of the small fit at the battery. It had been a brief shower, not a thunderstorm. As I scrubbed, my mind ran in circles like a dog chasing his tail. I should take Ruth and march down to the battery. I should demand payment for helping with the arrest. No, no demands.
I should politely ask the colonel to fulfill his promise as a gentleman would. I should write a letter to the general. I should beg Corzine to beg Mr. Bellingham to beg whoever to get us out.
I flopped the tablecloth into the rinse tub and started in on a shift that had gotten mixed in with the table linens. Ruth dropped her stockings in the rinse bucket and loaded her bucket with rocks.
We don't wash rocks, Ruth, I explained.
But they dirty, she said.
That is a truth, I said. The rocks were dirty, and washing them kept her calm and away from Madam. Scrub away, lass. There was no use in begging anyone. The chances of them listening to me were as good as a snowball's chance in the devil's bake oven.
I reached for the soap as Ruth flung her half-washed rocks, now muddy, not dirty, into the rinsing tub with a clean tablecloth. Before I could scold her, the back door slammed. I saw the flash of a yellow gown by the kitchen window.
Madam had been watching us. No doubt displeased that Ruth was washing rocks with the tablecloths. We must escape, soon.